Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
How you day? It's another day to be great. And today we are talking about cross-cultural perspectives that you can gain from travel. Today's guest is Andy Steves, and a lot of what we talk about are ways to broaden your horizons and how you can learn something about the differences around you. You know, what is the cultural importance of travel? What is the difference between fear and safety? What are the best cities to travel to if you want to learn about nuance? You know, the specific difference with Europe and the United States and how understanding these differences can help you understand the world. Hope you enjoyed the episode. This was definitely a fun one for me. I geek out about these type of topics because it's reminiscent of how I grew up. But I also think as we become more globalized and more digitalized, an effort to understand our neighbors as well as the impact of what that could be for our future is so key in developing the next set of global leaders. So hope you enjoy and check it out. Love ya! Welcome everybody to another episode of As Told by Nomads. And today's guest is Andy Steves of Weekend Student Travels. That's his company. Andy has been traveling practically since he was born. First, it was touring Europe with his renowned father, Rick Steves, and you can find him basically anywhere online. He's got a lot of content to detail what he does in travel and you know, how he's basically made a name for himself. But now he splits his time between Prague, Medellin, and his home city of Seattle when he's not traipsing and going all over Europe and running around this award-winning company, Weekend Student Adventures. We're going to dive into a lot of things today, particularly because this podcast is about communicating effectively across cultures. We're going to dive into the cultural importance of traveling outside of the U.S. and the difference between fear and safety when traveling. Very, very looking forward to this for a long time. So welcome to the show.
Teo, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here chatting with you about travel. And I like what you said about cross-cultural connections. Man, that's so important these days.
It is. You know, it's been my life. It seems like it's also your life as well. I imagine, you know, you always traveling around with your dad, you learned a lot of things and you picked up on several identity or code switching that is normally the case with a lot of kids of parents who travel a lot. So I'll look to dive into that as well. But let's start there. We're looking at the world today, and I want to juxtapose that with your youth. When you look at the world today, you see what's being promoted. A lot of division, a lot of my way is better than your way, nationalism, we don't want you to come taint our culture. And you look at how you grew up. How does that jive with you?
That's a big question. I don't know how much time we got, but
you got time.
You know, there's a cliche quote. I forget who it's from, but it says, "Those who forget history are bound to repeat it." And I think if you look at the dialogue today, the xenophobia, the otherism that's happening both domestically in our country in the U.S. and around the world, it's pretty scary. And right now, I'm training up to lead some pretty serious 3-week tours through Europe, serious but also a lot of fun. It's my responsibility to communicate culture and history across, you know, these 7 countries in Europe. And so right now I'm studying 20th century Europe. And when a population is economically frustrated, when there's people who feel disadvantaged, when opportunities disappear for whatever reason, you can see a clear pattern of ostracizing other people. or blaming other cultures. And man, I tell you, it's such an important topic to discuss these days, because the same thing that's going on now was happening to populations back in 1930s Germany and Europe. And in the 1600s, you know, there was other conflicts against the Christians and the Muslims and the Crusades all the way back in the 11th century. I'm not trying to bust into a history lecture here, but it is so important to have a broad view on the world today, and that's what travel does.
No, I mean, it's what you said. When you don't know your history, you're bound to repeat it. And the fact is, we all need to be intimate with the history to understand what's going on today. There's the reason for any war in the past and today has been because someone said, I don't like what you're doing, what you believe for, what you stand for. You're different from me. You have a different religion. And there's a lack of understanding of the other side. And that is plain and rearing its ugly head in many, many forms today, which is so important to me. And it's why I love what you do and what your dad does as well. As a kid, when, you know, your dad, Rick Steves, everybody knows who Rick Steves is. And I don't know what it was like for you, but when you found yourself constantly moving, how was that like initially? And then what did you learn about yourself from that experience?
Sure. So, again, great question. To kind of set the scene, the way I grew up with my family and our travels was that my dad would go to Europe about 3 months each year, from Easter until August or so, and just about time to go back to school. And so that's a long time to be away from your family. So my mom and my sister and I would go visit him about halfway through the trip for 2 or 3 weeks to break up that long separation. And so each year we would kind of line up with my dad's trip in another place in Europe. 1 year is Italy, another year Black Forest in Germany, 1 year Scotland, another Ireland. So every year we would go out, but guess what? It was always exactly at the end of the school year. My parents would pull us out about a week early before school was out. And of course, that's the one fun week of school when you are on good behavior all year to earn your duck bucks or whatever good behavior currency your second grade teacher used. So I had a mountain of them, but my parents would pluck me out of class and take me to Europe. So that, among missing end of school year parties and my friends' birthdays, it wasn't always, I didn't always have my rosy glasses on. That being said, it really did make me feel comfortable in Europe year after year. I'd pick up friends. And then when I had the chance to study abroad in Rome in 2008, during my junior year at Notre Dame, that's when I really realized what a beautiful continent it was. And more importantly, I realized that when I push myself beyond my comfort zone, when I take myself out of the American bubble, if you know what I mean, and put myself into situations surrounded by locals, Italians speaking only the local language, I found that's where the real magic of travel happens. And so ever since that period in my life, and when I was about 20, 21 years old, I realized this is my passion, and this is what I've been pursuing for the last, 10, 11 years. And the key point here is that when you cross those cultural boundaries, it puts a face on those people. So to bring it back to how we started the conversation, politicians for years have been saying, oh, let's just bomb the shit out of Iran, or let's bomb the shit out of ISIS. Well, obviously ISIS is horrible, but they're hiding out among civilian populations. And the world is more nuanced than that. And again, travel helps put a face on those people so we can begin to understand them, because that gives us the greatest chance for peace.
Gosh, you're speaking my language here. So I go to give talks and all this all the time, and one of the things that I always say is that the world is governed by binary systems in a world that is filled with nuance, right? There's no one that is quite one thing, just one thing or the other. And the danger that we have when we try to force people to put them in the box and say all, you know, black people are this, all Arabs are this, or Americans are that, is you miss out on humanizing, on connecting and understanding how to really get people to be separated from stereotypes that you've created, whether it's through media or false stories, which is why history is also very important. And I imagine that what you're saying here, the cultural importance of traveling outside the United States — I'm from outside the United States, I'm from Nigeria, so it's mine would be, my experience has been the reverse — is you're really encouraging people to start doing this at a young age. And from what I've read about you, you try and get millennials to take a gap year after high school or college, and do that in exchange for actually in exchange for the corporate jobs, and just you want them to explore an international adventure. Why do you feel like this is so important for people to do after high school or college?
Yeah, let's see. I think everybody, there's a track for everybody, whatever it might be. I think maybe I'm curious about where you read that, because for me, I was in college in 2005, 6, 7, 8, 9, right when the economy was going sideways. And right. So as we were graduating, none of my friends and I, we figured like, well, there's no way we're going to get the job we want. So like half of my friends just continued on with a master's, and then some continued on to a PhD, which is great on paper. But by the time you're 30, you have zero real world experience. It's going to be hard to find an employer that wants that. And so I feel like it's, whether you study abroad, whether you travel independently over the summer, or whether you take a gap year, I think you can learn a ton. And definitely the gap year is one where you can learn a lot about yourself, and it's at exactly the right time in your life where you got to develop that independence. It's kind of like sink or swim, or, you know, getting pushed out of the nest as a little baby bird. the mom just kind of kicks them out when she thinks that they can fly, and they do their best. And you learn really quickly. You'll have challenging experiences for sure. Maybe you'll get pickpocketed and lose everything. But that's when you really learn about yourself, and that's where you can really also learn about the world and how to communicate with people in completely different cultures.
Yeah, well, then let's address those fears, because that's something I hear all the time. You know, people, I remember when I first came here, people used to be surprised that I came out. They were like, how did you make it out alive from Nigeria? It's like a very archaic place, right? It's like the Lion King. And they used to say all these weird things to me. And, you know, people would sing things, do, I mean, like, what do you mean? And for me, obviously, when I took myself out of the conversation and froze for a moment so I wasn't too offended, you could understand where they got those stories from. So how do you address that fear thing, that safety thing, when you're going to a different place that you might not have seen? How can you speak to those myths and the reality?
I like to talk in anecdotes. So for me, I'm calling you from Medellin right now. Medellin, Colombia. Anytime you have a double L in this region, in this accent of the people that live here, they pronounce it as a J sound rather than an L, like a Y sound, like okay. In classic Spanish. So they call it Medellin. I love to go to places where most gringos, most Americans, Westerners are afraid to go when I'm not working in Europe. So, me and my sister, we traveled to Rio and Buenos Aires. We went to Southeast Asia, traveled to some pretty interesting places over the years. And then I had a chance to come to Colombia, and my family was like, Andy, why the hell are you going to Colombia? What's there? And then even when I was on the flight from Miami to Bogota to connect into the country for the first time, I was sitting next to an old lady who started taking notes down to tell me all the safe and dangerous neighborhoods. And so as I'm coming in on this flight, looking down at night on, you know, kind of the yellow lights of the city, I'm like, what the hell did I get myself into? As soon as I touch down, you know, you just take your time and be very aware of your surroundings, trust your gut, and remember that fear is different from being safe. And remember that those are two different things. And being fearful doesn't necessarily mean that you're safe. So I find that when you're traveling, just pay attention and, stay calm and really trust your gut. This is coming from a 6'2" white male that speaks English. I mean, I have it as easy as can be, going through and communicating in my original language, and everybody from Denmark to Japan needs to learn my language in order for us to communicate. You know what I mean? But so far I've been able to stay out of trouble for the most part, get around as much as I need to and get what I need, whether it's medicine, food, drinks, whatever. So, I'm happy to go into any other specifics,
That's good.
It's people forget how dangerous it is to just live in the States. I mean, our gun violence is insane. 35,000 people are killed by guns every year, mostly in single shootings where one person is killed. Our media dramatizes mass killing so much, and that stays on the air for months every time it happens. But the majority and the true tragedy is just the suicides, the accidental shootings, and then the intercultural violence. And I just feel like more guns is not the solution. So, anyways, I don't mean to rant.
No, it's okay. It's okay. This is your platform. No, I love that. I love the distinction you made between being fearful and what safety actually is. I'll also add, much like anything, when you go to new environment, doing research is key. You know, this is all about, we need to learn how to humanize other people. So do the research, call the people, make sure you have things that they're familiar around. Do things that you already normally do and build community around that. If you love soccer, or as I normally like to say, football, but whatever. Anyways, if you love the round ball that you actually play with your foot, or if you love basketball or music, you know, find things around those things and you know, build communities around that. And gradually you start to find your way around those things. And, you know, also, like you said, when you get lost and stuff sometimes happens, some of the best experiences can come out of that as well.
Definitely. For me, that's a tip that I've been sharing for years. Bring your hobbies and your passions and your interests with you while you travel, because immediately you customize your experience to whatever gets you most excited. And the great news is it's usually free or very affordable. So much of tourism today has been mass produced or designed to become very profitable, because now it's big, smart business. It's I don't know, it's like half of Europe's economy, you know. Yeah. And so they've become very smart about marketing all these activities to tourists, whether it's from Paris or Rome or Dublin. All these options that you have in front of you cost like $25, and it's easy to blow through $300 in a day. But if you bring your own interest, whether it's cycling or jogging or yoga or, you know, flag dancing, whatever it is that you're into, just Google it and see what events and what clubs and what meetup groups are going on in those places that you're going to travel to, and get involved. And that's been a great way to connect with people from different cultures and backgrounds.
No, I love that. I love that. So a lot of your experience growing up and even now as an adult is you spent a lot of time in Europe. And Europe is, you know, it's a continent with different types of cultures, but I'm very interested in what you would say the difference is between Europe and the United States.
Oh, there's a good question.
You can start off with identity. You can start off with city-wise. I'm just curious because
sure.
I lived in Europe as well. I lived in Sweden, and I have a lot of family in England. But sure. After the World Cup, listening to some people talk about immigration, and listen to a lot of my European friends who talk to me as a Nigerian living in the United States talk about certain things here, and a lot of Americans talk about Europe, it's very clear that, you know, there are very different ways of doing different things. So I'm curious as to what your perspective is.
Sure. Well, yeah, absolutely. This is going to be fun to talk about. So Europe and the States, they're about the same size. There's 740 million Europeans and 325 million Americans. So if you think about, to compare the countries, they're relatively similar in size and GDP. The country of the States, USA, versus the continent of Europe, all of those added together.
Right.
But they have double the population. And so more than double the population. And so what you're looking at here is a continent that is much more dense, has a lot more people in it, many more languages, many more... You know, in the States, it's relatively diverse, but people have been coming for generations, and they're all kind of blending, amalgamating, or blending together, kind of melting pot is the classic expression. Mm-hmm. But in Europe, you still have very distinct identities, whether it's Scandinavian or Irish Catholic or French ex-colonial immigrants that have come into France from Europe, from Africa. And so you have all these different cultures and languages, and they can coexist peacefully. But the issue right now in Europe is it has a population demographic triangle in the wrong direction. What I mean by that is it's aging. European women have on average, I think, 1.2 kids each on average, something like that, 1.5. Whereas in the States, we also are growing, but in a very different way. The white population, or the Caucasian Americans, tend to have less kids, whereas there's more Hispanic. Hispanic families have tended to be bigger over the last generation or 20 years or so. So what we're seeing is that in American politics, you have this xenophobia of, the right wing saying in 20, 30 years, white people are going to be the minority. And this is just setting off alarm bells to all these people who are scared of different cultures. In Europe, you have two things. You have a long familiarity with different populations living very close together, peacefully, and sometimes not peacefully, many times not peacefully, but you still have that history. And so it's a very interesting time to see what's going on, because you add that xenophobia to economic hardship and you have exactly what's going on right now. France, England, Poland, Germany all have right-wing extremist groups that are coming up to the mainstream. I mean, even the Front National was in the finals or the presidential vote in France last year. Thank goodness, what's her name, Marine Le Pen, didn't make it all the way. Mm-hmm. But you still have.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This very serious right-wing movement going on because of the xenophobia. So, again, to compare and contrast, the density of diversity in Europe is many times that what we have in the States. That being said, the U.S. is a beautiful country, lots of good people, but we just got to stay smart and not clamp on to the – well, let me say it this way, not be passive consumers of news. The last thing I would say, because of that density of diversity in Europe, the density of population, they – are raised to consume a lot less. They consume much less gas. They consume much less energy and electricity. They create much less garbage than Americans, because we have the space and we have the backyard to create these massive landfills out of sight of most people. So when you get to Europe and other countries all around the world, in fact, everybody consumes less than the States and Americans. So that's one thing that you'll see pretty clearly.
Look, Andy, I know you do a lot of travel shows, but I really feel like you should do one that really highlights this, because there's so much nuance there. And mm-hmm. even listening to you talk about, the difference in the continent, I get excited by this, because I have these conversations with a lot of my European friends. I have in Nigeria, we were colonized by England. So, I'm, mm-hmm. I'm like the one of the few in my family that decided to venture up here. But another thing that I've noticed, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, is sometimes when I have a conversation with people, they think, people in Europe, they think that America is so focused on race and all these conversations and identity, like African American, Asian American, Chinese American, all that. And there, particularly if you look at this soccer with France, when people were saying, oh, we got, look like, we're making a joke, France won the World Cup. The French ambassador sent a letter to Trevor Noah here to basically scold him and say, how dare you say that when it's France? Like, this is our, we sing Les Marseillais, this is us. And it was so interesting to me when Trevor Noah responded, he said, all he was trying to say is that you can be both, and it doesn't take away from the other. And yeah. A lot of people in France were so mad. Like, what is, why you're French? You came here. So that's it. And so I'm just curious about whether you've noticed any of that.
Well, no, there's all sorts of, I was seeing those graphics that you were mentioning. Half the French team is colonial French, yeah. Expats or whatever they're called. And so I don't see anything wrong with calling that out. I mean, they are where they are, and they came from where they came from. I think that's something to be, I don't think that takes away at all from the win. I mean, it's exactly. France still won, and they're wearing the blue jersey, and there you go. A lot of Europeans tend to laugh at Americans, yes. And the way we cling to our identity. And this is something uniquely American because, for example, I went to Notre Dame, and inevitably, you know, when you're having your conversations in freshman year, everybody asks, so what are you? What's your heritage? And everybody says, like, well, I'm half English and a quarter German and a quarter Danish or whatever. That's such bullshit. Your family's been in the country for 150 years. You're American, yeah. You know, and so Europeans tend to call that out and say, no, you're American. Sure, you might have heritage, but you can't say I'm Irish American when you're sixth generation. And so that I'm included in that. We've tracked our family back to 1824, County Cork, Ireland. And wow. I had the chance to, between my talks in universities in Dublin and Limerick and Galway and Cork, I had a chance to take a rental car out to the Famine Church where my four times great grandparents were married in 1824. And like William Condon and Catherine something or other, I forget, but it was really special to connect with exactly this ruin of a church. It only had the stone sidewalls and the bookends of the church. The wooden roof had long disappeared, and it had turned into kind of an eerie graveyard, like a famine graveyard and a famine church. A third of Ireland lost its population to famine, and a third of Ireland lost its population to emigration and left a million, and the country still hasn't recovered from that population loss. But anyways, for me, it's something special to connect with that identity for sure. But I think Americans are pretty hung up on this whole question of it. We're all Americans. We're all in this together. And I think better ideas come from more ideas. Better processes come from more perspectives. And I think it's so important to bring people together on what we share in common rather than divide them as our current president is doing.
You know, it's interesting for me. I was born in Nigeria. I came from a country where, you know, I lived in five countries, four continents because of my dad's job as a diplomat. And initially, first part of my life, majority, you're the majority. And then I started to go to different parts of the world where I was the minority and all your differences were pointed out. You know, as a 10, 11-year-old kid, that's a very interesting place for an identity. And my identity crisis led me to sort of just figure out a code switch and understand different cultures and different things. And I remember the first time I came across an American, because I went to an American International Middle School, and, you know, that question came up, where are you from? Quarter Irish, quarter this, quarter that. And then the more I've lived here, especially with people from underrepresented groups, I found that tied to identity is actually something that's empowering for them, where they feel like, wow, I'm embracing an element of myself, and I'm still keeping that part of my identity. And you see that with representation. Black Panther came out. You saw what came out where people were like, wow, this is great to see us on screen. And then Crazy Rich Asians just came out as well, which is another thing with the Asian population. So, I mean, so I understand where it comes from as well. And then on the other end, where a lot of Europeans would say, well, look, you're just that, you're just that. I think that there's nuance in between that, where isn't it possible to still be a person of a country, but also be able to, just like you traced your history back to 1800s, to be able to know that? Because I think knowing that will help us with part of what's going on in today's world, where I think we're just drawing these lines of division. And we're forgetting how it came about, you know, what that person got here in the first place and how that came about. And I don't know. It's just my thoughts. It's just, I know, I think the answer's in the middle somewhere.
Of course. People should definitely hang on to their identity, but not to the point where it excludes people. I mean, if you look at a lot of the, if you look at a lot of the population in the South, they are Irish Americans that came in that famine wave as well. Bluegrass, you know, like backwoods country style of music, it directly derives from Irish folk music. And when they arrived, there were signs hanging on the stores, "No Irish wanted," you know, or hiring, "No, your Irish need apply." The Irish were ostracized as the, you know, garbage leftovers of Europe, and nobody wanted them. But, you know, Statue of Liberty says, "Give us your hungry, your poor, your tired." And I think it's so strange to what's it called? Kind of pick and choose from America's founding values. It's just so bizarre. Separation of church and state, you know, a well-regulated militia has the right to bear arms, you know, all these things. How can you piece that apart and only take the handful of words that mean something to you that you want, you know? So it's just I think we're starving for an intelligent conversation. I think intelligent conversations are important right now.
Well, no, thank you. And that's exactly what, you know, it's been interesting for me to observe is I just see a lot of picking and choosing, and that you said it better than I was trying to say. And whenever I look at it, I'm like, well, your arguments aren't consistent because whenever you see people campaigning, except for the last election, it's like we are a melting pot. And then whenever someone's trying to rally to someone's base, they say the right things. And then after that, it's like, I don't know. And so I love what you're saying. And I think understanding the differences between Europe and America is very, very key, because I've always said colonialism and slavery are cousins, and they've sort of laid down the foundation for a lot of what goes on in the world today.
So yeah, they're hand in hand.
Yeah.
I mean, you colonialize to rape, pillage, and plunder and extract.
Yes.
Like, the only point of colonialization was extraction of wealth under the guise of spreading a religion.
Yes, exactly. And so, yeah, and as someone who's seen firsthand what that has led to, I'm always like, that history has to be known. And you know, when you take people's identity away, there's that longing to want to get it back. And so it's that level of understanding, and it shouldn't be translated as fear and you're taking over.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting. What are the best cities for millennials right now, in your opinion?
Oh, man. Here's the thing. I have a personal dilemma right now. Like, my entire background is Europe. I've traveled almost everywhere in Europe. Love it. People are great, but it's getting more and more expensive, more and more crowded. I feel like there's a new middle class of course, Americans, but also Indians, Chinese, Japanese. There was a point 10 years ago where tourism really did take a hit, because traveling is kind of the fun budget that comes last in most people's pocketbook, you know, and so that was the first thing to get cut when belts got tighter. And so it really went down. But now, you know, the Colosseum, the Eiffel Tower, Big Ben is just so crowded that I'm looking to get off the beaten path. That's why in Europe, I really like going to kind of not secondary cities, but not the top 10. And so Krakow, Budapest might be well in the top 10 by now. I've been living in Prague for the last 6 years, but now it's just been getting more and more crowded, more and more expensive, because again, Tourism Europe has been optimized so that they know in the tourist center, you'll pay $3 for a bottle of water. Tourists will pay $3 for a bottle of water. They'll pay exactly 16 for a sit down lunch. They'll pay exactly 36 for dinner, as long as it's nice, you know, and so just very quickly, you're eating kind of downtown Seattle, San Francisco, New York prices throughout your trip. So that being said, I've loved traveling around Colombia. I'm here in Medellin, where breakfast delivered to your door, eggs, arepa, which is kind of like a puck of food, or not food, but bread, cheese, juice, fresh juice, and a coffee is $2.50. Lunch delivered is $4. And a dinner date for two with a drink is about $20.
Oh, wow.
And so coming from Seattle, where to do that would cost $100 out the gate just for dinner, it's just so nice to be able to live in a place where I can, you know, I'm not making that much money, but I can make enough to just live very comfortably here, whereas I'd be in a apartment, you know, 40 minutes outside of the outside of Seattle, you know, just eating noodles and rice, but on the same budget. So when I'm not home visiting family, when I'm not in Europe working, I've been hanging out in Medellin recently.
Wow. Okay, Medellin. And then you mentioned some of the Eastern European countries, which actually don't get enough love as they should. I've heard Croatia is beautiful. I've heard parts of Poland. My favorite place in Europe is Greece. And I know that's, I know that's a popular destination for tourists, but I can't get past Santorini. Santorini is just gorgeous to me. But I always recommend that. So, I love that you brought South America as well. Medellin, my, business partner is from, Colombia as well. So she's always talking about, she's from Cartagena. So,
Costeña.
Yeah. So she's,
It's been fascinating kind of, how to put this without sounding kind of hoity-toity, but you know, I grew up traveling every year to Europe, so the newness was never really there for me, because it was always just going back to Europe again, since I couldn't remember. My mom was pregnant when she brought me to Europe for the first time, you know. So the newness wasn't there, you know, the awe of the Colosseum or the Eiffel Tower. Again, I'm not trying to sound all fancy, it was never there. And so I, you know, it's weird, but I really like that feeling of showing up to a place and feeling that pit in your stomach, like, what the hell did I get myself into? And then the following challenge of overcoming that. And so that's been something I've enjoyed. And that's, you know, to be honest, 2 years ago when I came to Colombia for the first time, I was like, you know, I was like, what the hell did I get myself into, when that old lady was not sure if she wanted to let me go, you know, on my own, sitting next to me on the plane. With time and practicing my Spanish and my salsa skills, I've become more and more comfortable here.
Love that. Well, then that segues into what your second edition of your guidebook. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. So in 2015, I wrote my first book. It's a guidebook, featuring 13 of Europe's top cities. You can name them. I'm sure London, Amsterdam, Dublin, Rome, Florence, Venice, Budapest, Prague, Berlin, Madrid, Barcelona. I'm sure I'm forgetting something in there. But these are some of my favorite cities. I think they're where most people go on their first and second visit to Europe. And so I wanted to kind of make a very succinct summary of the top things to do on a 3-day visit, plus some options if you have extra time in any one of these amazing European cities. So I figure the way I travel and the way most people travel these days is by city hopping. So the book is called Andy Steve's Europe, City Hopping on a Budget. And you can check that out on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore, of course. And the news is that the second edition just came out in April of this year, 2018. So we've been getting great reviews and feedback from that so far.
That's good. And I'll definitely make sure I put that in the show notes. But I love how you're hacking the system and you're encouraging people to live outside of the bubble. That's something that I love. Just that reminder of what travel actually does. You and I, you know, we grew up in a position where we didn't necessarily have a choice. But that experience has led us to see that the world is bigger than most of us think it is. And it's, in order for us to understand it, we have to actually experience it. So there is that element, and I think that's obviously why I'm doing the podcast and you're doing what you're doing with your book and We Considered Adventures. Can you talk to us about that and why you decided to follow your father's footsteps?
Sure. So I studied abroad in 2008, had the time of my life, and me and my friends, we realized, wow, we have 3-day weekends. Let's travel around from Thursday night till, you know, Monday first thing or Sunday evening. So each weekend we'd go up to Venice or to Prague or to the Swiss Alps or down to Sicily. And it just naturally felt to me to be the one to organize all these travel plans for my friends. So by the first weekend, I had like 5 or 6 friends coming along with me to, Venice. The next weekend, 10 up to Switzerland. By the end of the semester, it was 35 friends, but also random acquaintances that were taking along with me everywhere I was going. And that's when I realized, wow, there's a need here. There's an opportunity. I'm uniquely experienced and placed to design something, some service for this kind of market. And so I went back to Notre Dame, finished my undergrad in industrial design and Italian language and literature. But on the side, I was working on the business plan for this company. And that's what I started as soon as I graduated in 2010. And I've been running that ever since.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I love that. I love that. And it's, I don't know. I just love hearing stories like that. And I'm going to make sure we put that weekend student adventures in the show notes. But that's always so cool when you find your purpose. And then what I heard there is that you found your purpose. And it was based on experiences you had, but based on things you got to see other people do. And you want to make sure that the world is a safer place and it's a more understanding place. And you're doing mm-hmm. it with your company. So that's
yeah. an admirable goal. And you can check that out at wsaeurope.com. And just like you're saying, I love to work with local guides. So I go in, I set up the tours for somebody like myself who likes to learn about the city, but also have a good time, go out at night and experience the best nightlife and so on. And so I design the tour myself. And then I run it a couple times, improve it, tweak it, and then I find and hire a local guide to take over the tour for me to give it the local flavor. And that's been something I've been committed to since day one. So that's been a really fun, challenging, but and also rewarding project.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll make sure we give the audience access to that, and they can check that out. As a way to wrap up, though, I always ask my guests this question. My mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. That's the foundation of everything that I do. So I'm curious, you, Andy, how do you use your difference to make a difference?
I like to think I empower young Americans to broaden their horizons and learn something from the diversity and beautiful differences around the world. I like to think that I'm doing that exactly at the right time in their lives. Hopefully they go on with that broader perspective and can replace the people who are currently governing our institutions.
Well, I would say you're doing a good job, and thanks for being
playing the long game.
I think it has to be a long game because that's what it is. There's no shortcuts to bettering humanity. So thank mm-hmm. you for that. I really, really enjoyed hearing your story. Really enjoyed hearing your thoughts on where the world is now, and particularly loved the differences that you highlighted between Europe as a continent and the United States as a country. So thank you for that.
Happy for it, man. Thanks for connecting. I appreciate the call. Thanks for having me on the show as well.
Pleasure is mine. And ladies and gentlemen, until next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.